Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
This week on Meatin' 3, we're exploring the culinary wonders of urban New Jersey with a tour through Newark. We speak to Frank Mentisana at Phillips Academy Public Charter School.
This idea of family style and made from scratch lunches continues to be a bit of an anomaly in the city.
We also hear from Gil Speyer from All Points West Distillery.
Newark used to have an incredibly rich beverage alcohol history.
And we'll tour Aero Farms, the world's largest indoor vertical farm.
We're growing using 390 times more productivity than field farming and 95% less water.
Tune in to this week's Meatin' 3 on Heritage Radio Network to be amazed at the wonders of Newark. That's Meat plus sign THREE. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Elena Santigade. Today, I'm happy to have Rachel Smith of Denver's Goat Zur Sour Beer Tap Room here in the studio with me. Goat Zur, meaning good acid in Dutch, has a super unique angle. According to their website, it's the world's first sour beer tap room. They're a self-proclaimed sanctuary for sour beers, boutique cheeses as well, of course, cutting-edge charcuterie, and fresh baked bread. Rachel Smith is the general manager of Goat Zur, and she also happens to be an American Cheese Society certified cheese professional. Rachel, welcome to Cutting the Curd.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. My last few guests have been over the phone, so having you here in the studio at Roberta's is amazing.
I'm really happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so let's talk about Goat Zur. And I've been there, as you know. And I loved it. And I kind of want to paint the picture of for our listeners of the neighborhood. Is it Five Points?
Yeah, Five Points in Denver.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a really historic jazz neighborhood.
Is that what the five, like what do the Five Points refer to?
So there's just, it's five different neighborhoods that kind of intersect at one point, and it's a really interesting intersection that has five different roads that all meet together.
Oh.
So that's kind of the point that's that they're referencing, and it's just about block and a half down from where we are.
Okay, and you said it's a jazz neighborhood?
Yeah, so it's been a very historic neighborhood in Denver. So, you know, as it's been developing, there's a lot of talk about how the neighborhood's going to expand and grow.
Yes.
It's very familiar to New York. So.
Oh, yes. Well, we're sitting in one such neighborhood
exactly.
Here in Bushwick, which many people would never believe if they'd only seen it 30 years ago and
exactly.
Then see it today. Okay, and so then when did you all open your doors at Goat Zur?
So we opened May 8th, so it'll be 2 years on May 8th this year.
Oh, coming up on it. That's a big anniversary.
Yes, it is.
Oh.
Kind of made it over the hump, as some restaurant people will say.
Yes, yes, 2 years. That's a big one. And do you think that, do you consider yourselves now, I know that, you know, it's a sour beer tap room, but you also have a pretty extensive menu and the food focus seems like a big one. Like, do you consider yourselves a more bar, restaurant? Like, how do you think of it?
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. When we first started, we thought it would be more of a sour beer tap room. And when you were kind of introducing us, that was definitely kind of more the focus. And it was more going to be bar snacks with some really amazing cheese,
mm-hmm.
but maybe not as extensive as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized that there's a lot of people coming in for sour beer, but there was a lot of people coming in for the food.
Mm.
And it wasn't just because of my great cheese selection, but Anthony LaPiccolo, our head chef, his food got a lot of attention immediately out of the gate, and so we had a lot of people coming in just for the food, and that really weren't into sour beer as much. They were interested in it, but, you know, they maybe were looking for wine or some non-sour beers as well. So it kind of transformed, and we've kind of evolved with what the consumer was asking for.
Interesting. And the whole idea of Goedzoer sprouted from, like, from what I understand in my research, a group of friends that were basically, like, loving sour beers and just wanted to have bigger selection and share that with other people, essentially.
Yeah,
is that the deal?
Yeah, exactly. So Anthony is one of the owners, and then the other owner would be John Feynman. He's from Backcountry Pizza in Boulder is his other restaurant. It's more of a tap room with 70 beers and more bar food focus. And they were just drinking sour beers in a garage, eating good food, and was like, I just want to do this somewhere. Like, why is there nowhere I can go do this?
I like
and
that.
And so, you know, because most beer bars kind of have a more sports bar atmosphere and, you know, maybe not as inviting for someone who, when there's a sports game on, you just want to go and have a nice drink. And
hang out with your friends.
Exactly. Right. So kind of having a different atmosphere than a lot of other beer bars was kind of our...
That was a big part of it.
Yes.
Now, how many beers do you have on... And I assume you have some on tap and then you have a bottle program.
Yes.
So what's the number like?
So we have 26 on draft.
And all sour.
We've rotated a little bit there. Again, just kind of always saying we've evolved as... looking at what the consumer
something
needs.
Something for everyone.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Especially as a new restaurant in a newer neighborhood that's developing. It's
some flexibility makes sense.
Absolutely. And just really, you know, at the end of the day, it is a business. So you need to make sure that you have people in the door that want your product. And so now it's 23 are going to be sour. And then 3 are non-sour. I mean, it's not. It's still very sour focused. And then our bottle program is about... it's like over 200 bottles now, I believe.
Wow.
And those are exclusively sours.
Okay.
And then we recently, within the past 6 months, have brought in some natural wine, which kind of goes along with the sour beer because they're both spontaneously fermented. And
they have that good acid that your focus is on.
Exactly. And then some we have like 5 or 6 high-end spirits now as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So that's like quite an amazing selection.
Yes.
And then, now tell me, so it sounds like some people showed up, loved the food, and probably were curious but confused by sour beer, I would imagine.
Yes.
How, have you converted the neighborhood into sour beer fans? Like, how has it gone?
I think there's definitely some people who came in a little weary of what sour beer was, but still really intrigued on trying something. And those are the easiest people to, you know, hop on the sour beer
they're
train.
They're, like, open to it.
Exactly.
So.
And then a lot of people's interpretation of sour beer is that they're all going to be like a Sour Patch Kid sour, and really more traditional, more spontaneous and wild ales are going to be more barnyardy funky with some slight tartness to it, and then more the like newer styles of sours are going to have maybe a lot of fruit forward, a little bit sweeter, or some are just people really sometimes one question we always joke about is what's your most sour and it's like okay, like I have that, I can answer that question, but it's not necessarily what
it's not necessarily like the most interesting
exactly
thing you might recommend.
Yeah, and you just your palate just is like feels it in a completely different place, and you know it's interesting to see what people go for.
Do you do flights and tastings?
So we do 5-ounce pours 10-ounce pours for all of our sours. So I'd say a lot. We get that question a lot, but the 5-ounce pours is just a little bit larger than a lot of flight pours. And so we kind of, and similar to the cheese program, it's order what you want, and we'll and the staff is really there to guide you through it.
Okay.
So the cheese is all available to order by the ounce, and then we have the 5-ounce pours of the beers. So it's really kind of create your own flight. Yeah. And the staff is really there to guide you along.
So for in getting to the cheese part of all of this, sour beer and cheese, amazing combination.
Absolutely.
I mean, it feels like when you have it, I remember tasting that combination for the first time and like losing my mind. I could tell you the year and probably the date. I think it was, maybe I'm late to the game. I don't know, but it was January 2013.
No, you're new to the game.
That was new?
Yeah.
That was early?
You're good.
That's when I first had cheese and sour beer. So do you do a lot of pairings for folks? If you've got, I want to hear about your cheese selection too. I'm curious how many cheeses are on the menu. But how much are people ordering specific stuff versus you sort of making suggestions?
Yeah, so from my perspective in the kitchen, so we have a small 8-seat chef counter, which is kind of my, I really like that because it reminds me of being back on the retail side mm-hmm. of things where I can really have that one-on-one interaction and give people a taste of something and kind of
right.
see where they want to go. And then besides that, I really feel like it's hard for me to say how many people because I'm not necessarily on the floor taking the mm-hmm. orders every time because I've directed them to send the to pick the cheeses out and talk to them. So mm-hmm. I think it's kind of a collaborative effort. But I would say that at least like of our cheese boards that are coming in, almost half are going to be people ordering their own mm-hmm. like their own selection of cheeses versus just like the we have a dealer's choice board. So there are like three cheeses, five cheeses, or two meats right. and two cheeses, and then we'll have some themed boards as well. So we'll have like an Italian board or a local nice. Board and stuff like that.
And so if someone comes to the counter and sort of says they're interested in a specific beer, but they're not sure about the cheese, then that's where you can kind of get creative.
Absolutely.
And do a pairing for them.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, of course, I'm going to ask, what's your favorite pairing right now?
Ooh, my favorite pairing.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Or even so just a delicious one. Yeah,
yeah.
What's a great one that we could talk about?
Well, so we had a really interesting beer from Modern Times that was aged in sherry barrels that I really loved. And then I just love pairing Blue Murine cheeses in general with just with sour beer. I think that they're a great match in general.
Yeah.
So, and then classic that is a great seller for us every time is just Robbiola Bocina. And it's like classic and great. And it's like everybody, it's a crowd
pleaser.
Totally
lovable, yeah.
Yes, exactly. We have some cheeses that people will like personally find me on Facebook if I take off the menu. Like Prairie Breeze. People have stalked me on Facebook and been like, where is the Prairie Breeze? And I have to like bring it back. So now I just keep a block.
I thought I was going to rotate my selection, but
I don't even put it on the menu. I just keep it in the back. And then the people who know about it still just order it.
That's amazing.
I know.
That shows that you've got a dedicated customer base right there.
Yeah.
2 years in, I'm impressed that you could have a secret block of cheddar in the back that only the in the nose know about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So how many cheeses do you have at any given time?
Between 20 and 25, maybe a little bit more every once in a while when I get too excited. But
and do you, you know, one of the things that it's interesting because I had Rachel Freer on the show a few months ago, and it was a really exciting episode because we talked a lot about food service and how to get more cheese in the kitchen. And I feel like there aren't, and Rachel and I were both sort of spirited talking about this, that we want there to be more of a focus on cheese in, you know, bar, restaurant, prepared food settings. And so I'm curious, like, has the selection, you're 2 years in, has the selection of cheeses grown, stayed the same, gotten smaller? Like, do you feel that you're keeping up with the inventory demand in that way? Like when you're ordering that many cheeses, just keeping them all in good shape can be a challenge, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So how is that going? And how are you feeling the trend in terms of the last 2 years?
Yeah. I feel like we definitely grew in that first like 6 months to a year. Mm-hmm. We went from 12 cheeses to 25.
Ah, okay.
So
that's great.
Yeah. But our food menu in general went from a single, like one small sheet of paper with some bar snacks, a couple entrees, and then a cheese selection to a full food menu and then plus 25 cheeses and 15 different charcuterie items.
Wow.
So it expanded quite a bit. So that was just mostly people just ordering a lot of cheese and they were interested and I was willing to listen and very excited also. And so it was kind of, that was a lot of it. And then as the selection goes, it's fluctuated a little bit. It's hard for me because I really would love to buy all domestic made cheeses. Obviously the European classics have their place. But when I have a captive restaurant audience and they're already there to, most of them are there for the sour beer, and those are the easiest converts to being cheese nerds without them even realizing it because you speak the same language. So I found like when I'm selling cheese to somebody, like the words mold, bacteria, microbes, like that can kind of put people off. These people aren't scared by those terms at all. So you can,
they're already thinking about them in terms of the beer.
They call them bugs in beer. Like they're like, they call it like, it's like a common way to be like, oh, those bugs are good. So like they're really not like afraid of like kind of the nitty gritty.
Right.
Actually how fermented those, like, food works.
Yeah, there's a way, and you know, listeners, I'm curious, write in to us. I'll plug our social media handles and our email address at the end of the show. But I'm curious how many of you feel comfortable with those terms. And the terms we're talking about are bacteria, microbes, mold, fungi, yeast.
Yeah.
I mean, like, are you used to talking about those in terms of cheese, or how often is it more of like just talking about flavor and aroma?
Yeah.
And, you know, like there's sort of these two versions of the cheese language, I
definitely
think, right?
Yeah, I felt that before this job, I was kind of was taught to kind of stray away from some of the words that I used to sell the cheese, and that really grabbed people on board.
Right.
So like, for example, we sell the cave age butter from Crown Finish Caves.
Oh,
we
yeah.
sell so much of that, and talking about how that flavor comes from it being in that cave
that
with all those other cheeses, that I think gets people so excited at our shop because of, you know, just the talk about what's going on with the beer.
Right.
And so it's really easy to transfer into those conversations. So.
Right, right. It's so interesting because, I don't know, it's like you mentioned having a captive audience is a big deal. And when I think about like the couple of minutes that you get lucky enough to have someone at like a retail counter versus potentially having somebody sit in front of you for an hour or longer at a tap room and, you know, restaurant style sort of setting, that seems really unique.
Absolutely. And especially if they sit at that counter, our kitchen's completely open. And then my little cheese station is as close to the counter as...
Right. If I remember correctly, is your cheese station facing... You're like facing the chef's counter seating?
We're right to the side of it.
Okay.
Yeah. So if somebody sits in a certain seat, I have to move some of my stuff to get to get it out of their way. Because I'll put all of my fresh bread and, you know, a notebook and all that stuff. So you're really like right in the mix. And so especially if you sit up there just to, you know, people are really intrigued with seeing the whole wheels of cheese, which kind of...
Oh, it's always fun, I think. You know, like before I ever worked in cheese, seeing a whole wheel opened up and broken
people
down.
People lose their minds.
Yeah, especially if you give them a little taste.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the best. Whenever I teach classes, I always tell everyone, if you see a wheel being opened, ask for a taste. The freshest bite.
Yes.
So let's take a... We're going to jump out for a quick break. And then listeners, we'll be back with Rachel Smith of Goedzer in Denver.
Great.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of Swiss Gruyere into the United States, but that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Cotbalt cave-aged cheeses, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
Are you enjoying our podcast? Heritage Radio Network has lots more. I'm Ethan Frisch.
And I'm Jenny Dorsey.
And together we host Why Food, a podcast about innovators, career changers, and entrepreneurs who are changing the face of food.
How did these folks decide to hit the brakes, start over, and become inspiring chefs, entrepreneurs, farmers, and activists they are today?
Browse episodes of Why Food wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm Elena Santigade, and I'm here with Rachel Smith of the world's first sour beer tap room, Goedzer, which I keep almost mispronouncing.
Most people do.
So this is I read it was a Dutch, and you mentioned Flemish word. Why Flemish?
So sour beer are more wild lambic styles.
Right.
Lambic is the more traditional Belgian style, is kind of our true inspiration. Obviously we focus a lot on all different kinds of sour and wild ales, but the original inspiration was kind of more of a Belgian style.
And is that real? Is like, are the Flemish, the Belgian beers, those lambics, is that like the original sour beer?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think when you go back far enough in the beer history, all of the beers are going to be kind of in that sour wild.
Right. Because that's how they began.
That's the only way.
They weren't commercial yeasts.
Exactly.
There
you didn't have a closed tank system. Everything was open fermentation. So you're obviously going to have the influence from their native microbes no matter what.
Right.
And so just kind of as brewing has developed, people have kind of, similar to cheesemaking, have still relied on those traditional methods to produce those same flavors.
Now, were you always interested in sour beer? Because you have a cheese background.
Yes, I do.
More than beer.
Yes. So it's kind of funny how the worlds collided for me. I went to CU Boulder and was studying bio there. And then during college, I worked at the farmer's markets for Haystack Creamery at a Longmont.
And Haystack Mountain makes a lot of goat cheese, mostly all goat cheeses?
It was all goat when I first started, and then we started to bring in some cow milk cheeses.
Okay, do a mixed milk.
Yes, absolutely. So they...
Ooh, Sunlight. That's the cheese that
I the wash-drained one that they... And then the queso de mano is kind of their garrocha-inspired cheese. Yes. That one's my favorite.
So tasty.
Yeah. So I worked for the farmer's market for them, and then I worked at Backcountry Pizza in Boulder, was my other part-time job during school.
And the Backcountry Pizza, that's the owner of that business is now one of
them. Okay. Yes, and then Anthony was the chef there. So we linked up. And then kind of went to the other side of food service industry, took a break from the cheese thing, but was always kind of the designated cheese person in the restaurant no matter what, and then kind of moved around a lot after school because
that's what one does
that's what happens
mid-20s.
So I worked at a cheese shop in Breckenridge and helped open up the restaurant at Breckenridge Distillery, and they had a great they had a few different cheese and charcuterie boards there that I got to help out with, and then was out here for a little bit.
Yeah, you had a stint in New York City.
Yes,
in the
very
cheese
briefly,
world.
But it was. I've learned so much, and honestly, in New York, very quickly. So
well, and listeners, Rachel and I both have a cheese spot in common where we both spent time at Beecher's, and I can hear that like your devotion to American-made cheeses maybe that had something to do with it.
Yeah, Beecher's, and then also. Working at Saxelby's, obviously.
Yes.
The Vermont cheeses just kind of...
They grabbed you.
Oh my gosh, yes. Hence why I'm out here right now.
Okay, so that brings me to my next question, which is, what are you doing here? And
I
sort of know, but for our listeners, why don't you describe the project that brought you out to the East Coast?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've always been a huge fan of Parrish Hill and Peter Dixon and... we kind of met a couple years ago when ACS was in Denver, and then last year we kind of had a GoFundMe so I could go take my CCP exam, and then got to kind of talk more with him there, and we were talking about washing a cheese and sour beer because of, I just think that I'm really interested in kind of, again, back to the microbe side of things.
Yeah.
To me, there's so many like live things and the beer and live things and the cheese, just that collaborative.
And the history, even just the Belgian history of washing cheese with beer is a big one.
Yeah. Right. And I was kind of, we were standing there and we saw them from afar. Anthony was like, just go up and ask them. And I was like, I don't know. What if they say no? He's like, just go do it. I was like, okay. So like walked up. And so we made a collaboration beer spring of last year.
Okay.
Called Acid Jazz. And so there's a Five Points Jazz Fest every year in May, May 18th.
Ooh, that's right around your anniversary.
Yes, exactly. So we released this collaboration beer. It's a lambic style made with Westbound and Down, a Colorado brewery. And then we have local peaches and cherries added to that.
Now, wait, are you guys at Goedzer making the beer? Or you're having...
Okay. Yeah, so they make the beer, and then so they had these different blends, and then we blended these golden sours together, barrel aged them, and then added fruit to it to kind of make our own exclusive blend.
Wow.
And then we talked to Peter, and we sent this, Peter and Rachel, and we sent this all this beer out to them. All the bottles safely got there, which was great.
Yeah, that's the first hurdle to go over.
They get there, and then you don't drink them is the other hard part. And so it's, so they have been washing this batch of Humpel for us, and we were planning on going out a little later to get it, and Peter and Rachel called, and they were like, it's perfect,
it's
now.
Ready.
Like,
oh my gosh.
Come now.
It's like a baby.
So, exactly. So we bought our plane flights, and my mom happens to be moving out to LA, and she lives here now. So we're going to help drive her car out by taking the cheese with it. It's perfect. It's like everything fell in the right place. So we made our own kind of exclusive version of Humble, which we are cleverly calling Acid Washed.
Nice. I really like that. Acid Washed.
Yes.
And so, okay. How old is the cheese, roughly?
I believe it would be... I should have figured that.
That's okay. Quick math.
6 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
And tell us about it. How does it taste? Have you tried it
yet? I haven't tried it yet, so the anticipation is killing me.
So you are you on your way up to get it?
You're not on your way out? So I'm here today, and then tomorrow morning I will drive up there, spend the day with them, and stay at their... them tomorrow. And then on Tuesday, I'll drive back. And then we're kind of selling some wheels on our road trip and kind of, you know, we want to visit with some people we haven't had the opportunity to meet. And what's a greater way to meet somebody than to show up with,
Wheels of cheese.
With wheels of cheese that you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah. So listeners, that's how I found out about Rachel's journey and snagged her for the show. Because I heard that she was... you know, offering a few of these wheels from the batch to other folks who are curious. And I think Casa Lula took you up on a wheel.
Yes. And then we have some other places in Chicago and Detroit as well who took us up on
it. Wow, so you're going to make stops on your road trip back to Denver.
Yeah, so Tourist is taking some here. And then Pastoral is going to take some. In Detroit, the Cheese Lady will be taking as well. So, it's going to be fun.
So listeners... where you can look for Acid Wash.
Yes.
Collaboration cheese between Parish Hill Creamery and Goedzer. We just cited the spots, but we'll list them in the show notes too, the locations where you can get it.
And I'll get those to you as I find out who else is going to take the rest of them.
Okay, yeah, we'll add it. We'll keep adding them.
Yeah, because we do have 140 pounds, so for a restaurant, that's...
that's kind of a lot.
That's kind of a lot. but I think, given that we go through a lot of cheese. Most people are eating cheese when they're in our restaurants. So.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So back to the restaurant and sort of your role there. It sounds like you're stationed at the cheesemonger's sort of station or the cheese station.
Yes, I try to be there as much as possible. These days the office calls me more than I would like.
Right.
But, so I'm trying to train some other staff to maybe become cheese nerds. I haven't hired any... cheese background people before, so and they're kind of hard to come by every once in a while.
It's true.
In Denver too.
But I imagine you get a lot of folks who are curious or at least really into the beer, and like you said about customers, like converting someone who's really geeky about beer into becoming someone who's interested in cheese is kind of an easy win. Do you find that with your staff as well?
Oh yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. And some of the people there our staff is some of them are very beer focused and some are just good food focused as well.
Right. So they're into all of it.
Yeah. And then I think our team is really a close knit kind of family. Mm-hmm. Anthony and I are pretty much there every day and we're a couple. So we kind of are the, you know,
you're living your full life at work.
Yes, exactly. And then everybody else is there pretty much full time as well. So
that's nice.
Yeah.
How big is the team?
So the team's about 13 people right now, I think.
Okay.
With, about five of them being part-time.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so it's pretty close-knit, and everybody's very passionate about cheese, so.
That's great.
Very eager to learn.
I bet I want to, like, come for one of your pre-shift meetings.
Yes.
This is, like, the kind of place I want to hang out.
Just hang out.
Just, like, hear what you're all talking about.
Yeah, we have a lot of regulars who will just sit at the chef's counter for, like, 4 hours at a time and just have, like, one beer and they'll just have it very slowly and just kind of listen and... hang out.
That's
so you
amazing.
We're very much in the open and everything is
do you feel like you expect it, like is the response and are your customers similar to what you expected it would be, or is it different in some way?
For the most part it's kind of what I expected it to be. I what I was kind of surprised about that I more noticed kind of very towards the beginning was, like we said, that there wasn't as many solely coming for the beer nerd.
Mm, right. The people also wanted.
They wanted food. More. Mm. Yeah. And then also the thing is that when you're serving just sour beer, nobody, they can't bring their mom. They can't bring their
right.
their cousin who doesn't like sour
right.
beer
right.
or isn't really necessarily willing to try something else. So that was one thing that we kind of had to adapt to was that larger groups and things like that, that you need to have something for everybody.
Yeah.
As much as we want to provide this kind of niche market to provide exactly what we know, have envisioned, I don't think that we sacrifice anything that we want to put out there for the customer.
Right.
I just think we had to add a couple other things to get them in the door. And that's the thing, is somebody comes in and they order a glass of rosé. A glass of rosé really doesn't taste that different than a lot of our fruit-forward sours. And so that little like overlap, especially if they're eating a cheese and you give them a taste of a sour beer,
just to try it.
It's going to, they're going to segue really over and then just come back in. So I really think that the staff and customer interaction has been a lot of fun.
What for you, you know, I can only imagine how much time you must spend at work, because it sounds like a lot probably.
Yeah. A lot in the building. And then a lot is, since Anthony and I live together, it's like we go home and we're just still just like,
you're in it.
We always joke around. It's like, we're not going to talk about work. And then we just like go out to eat somewhere. And then it's like, goes off into this tangent. We're like, shoot, like get back.
we're like, supposed to not do it.
But at the same time, it's like, if you're having fun while you're doing it and we're passionate about it and we enjoy doing it together, then you know, why really?
Oh yeah. No problem there.
Exactly.
So what is it at this point? Like, what do you find yourself talking about? What are you and Anthony talking about the most these days, work-wise?
I think we really are excited about, you know, mostly the collaborative efforts that we've been able to do now that we're kind of 2 years in and kind of have our base more set there. The opportunity to do other projects
So has like been, the beer that you washed Parrish Hill with,
yeah.
even just doing that beer alone is...
Yes.
Is what you mean? And
yes.
then also the cheese, obviously.
Exactly. So we did the beer, and then we're going to do another version of the beer every single year that's going to have a slightly different variation on, and I kind of hope to expand that with different cheeses, as cheese collaborations as well. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, we're going... Our staff is going to Belgium this year.
What?
I know.
Your whole staff?
We invited the whole staff. They had to pay for their flights, and so most of them obviously hopped on board with that, but we're going to Tour de Goose. So Goose is like a... kind of a 3-year blended lambic. So
is that spelled G-U-E-Z-E?
Yes.
I never know how to say that out loud. Can you please say it again? Okay, Goose.
It's like booze, but with a G.
Oh, I'm so relieved.
Yes.
Now I know how to say it.
Now you know how. That's the one thing. We never want to come across pretentious there. And it's like between the name, the names of the cheeses, the names of the beers, the styles
There's
of the beers.
There's a lot
you
that
gotta
could be
really
intimidating.
Take it down a notch and just talk to people.
Right.
As it is. So,
okay, so wait, back to this
trip. Back to the trip.
How did this happen?
Yeah.
I mean, this is like the kind of thing, you're 2 years into a brand new business. To orchestrate something like that, I feel like there are super established businesses that like cannot even do the schedule for next week. So tell us how this happened.
To be honest, it's kind of a whirlwind. I'm still figuring it out. Anthony and John, our owners, went to the International Pizza Expo in Vegas.
Amazing.
And they just came back and told us we were going to Belgium.
Wow.
So I'm still trying to figure out how it's all going to work, but...
That's amazing.
Yeah. So we're going to get to meet a lot of great producers out there and kind of see... I'm really intrigued to see how just food and that beer is presented in that environment to kind of bring that back home.
Right.
And
Like
take
what
it there.
Other non-beer things are they going to have at
exactly.
that?
Exactly.
Yeah. Like how are they going to present it?
And just even looking at some of their websites, it's like there will be like raw milk farmstead cheeses and house-made charcuterie available for sale. It's like, what does that even mean?
What is that going to be like?
Exactly. So I'm really excited to see how that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so will you, I assume you'll close the... You close the tap room for a few days?
Yeah, we're going to close for a few days. There is some staff staying back, so we're kind of figuring out if we want to go to,
if
like, just serve some, like, bread and butter and beer. But at some point, you know, you always want to deliver your concept to the fullest. And so I don't want to...
Now, is this... So with this kind of idea and the other projects that you're pursuing, do you feel like... Like, what comes first, the idea or, like, the budgeting?
sadly the idea. It might not be the smartest the smartest business move, but I think for the most part we're able to get the idea and then kind of figure out how to make it work. And then going back to that captive audience, that's where I feel like I'm kind of, when it comes to cheese buying and also with our projects, that we were able to sell that, you know, really expensive cool cheese that you kind of have a harder time in a retail environment, because when you it's just, it's harder to sell somebody on a half pound of it versus like and an $8 like ounce of something.
So
I really think that you're able to, and we price our cheeses by the ounce differently. So on our menu, it's like just similar, like going down a draft list. So like so
each of them has their own price.
And at first I thought that would maybe push people away from the higher priced items.
No.
They dive right in because they realize that it's...
There's a reason.
There's a reason it's higher priced. So it's kind of been interesting to... But I try to keep it at a pretty...
Within a good range.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's something for everybody there. Which I also think allowed me to put some cheeses at a more approachable price as well. So like there's some cheeses that you can get an ounce for $3.50.
So, that's so great.
So you can come in and just have one cheese and a beer and be out the door for like $12.
And it's that's amazing.
Yeah.
Now I feel dizzy.
Yeah.
Just thinking about that reality living in New York City.
Yeah. That's
where I walk out my front door and somehow I've lost $12.
Exactly.
Okay. Now here's a question for the wonky retailer and restaurant folk listening. How much of that do you print on a menu? Like, how logistically tough is that? Or do you have a system where getting those prices in the right place and out to the customers correctly, like, how hard is that?
Very difficult. That's like my whole job. And that's why I was saying, like, the office calls me more than I would like.
About this.
That's a lot of it. And then since I recently took over as GM, I guess it's not so recently anymore. It's like 6 months now. But, you know, kind of
congratulations.
Thank you. But kind of handling more of that.
The numbers.
Mm-hmm. And I was already doing the pricing for the cheese before, but now like the invoice paying and billing and, you know, all of that stuff has been.
Totally.
You know, not as simple. And then just the amount of paper that we go through drives me bonkers sometimes. Yeah. But there really isn't a. So I try to keep it a little. Some stuff similar and then kind of keep a special sheet for that stuff that's only going to be there for a few days, you know.
Right. Wow. Oh my gosh.
Well, lots of menu changes. Lots of learning how to use
Illustrator
and making the menus and all of that has been a fun and
now you
big
have
endeavor.
Graphic design chops.
Exactly.
What do you feel like is your favorite part of a given day? Like a really specific actual moment?
I love it when someone comes in and it's just like, what are you excited about? Because I get to go off on, you know, whatever tangent that I want to. And most of the time when people ask that, they're asking because they want to come on board. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's lots of different things that, and especially at the counter too, because then I can, they'll have a cheese and I'll put a suit, and we make all of our different accoutrements and everything in-house as well.
Oh, you do? So all the, any accompaniment that's going with the cheese.
And absolutely.
Do you serve, like if I ordered one cheese at your counter, if I ordered the Robiola, is that always coming with an accompaniment of some kind?
Yes. So every single cheese comes with an accompaniment and they, most of the time, unless, so I have about, like I said, 25 cheeses and we have about like 15 different accompaniments.
Wow. Oh, so fun.
So you can kind of mix and match, and then also with that, it's kind of fun to, you know, hear what they, they're like, I actually put this cheese with this jam instead. Mm-hmm. And I, or like, I put this, like the onion jam on the prosciutto and it was delicious. And just kind of hearing like what speaks to people's palates differently, I think is really, really fun to play around, and that there's no, to try to make cheese and charcuterie and sour beer and all this seem less intimidating, because it's not.
Yeah, there's it no shouldn't wrong be. Answers.
There's no wrong answer. Like the funny, the question that I always love is, you put down the board and you explain what everything is, and then they go, so how do I eat it? It's like, however you want.
Yeah, literally, like,
they're
you
like,
can do it.
Do I make little sandwiches? Like, what do I do?
I'm
like,
just be inspired.
Just mix and match, do what you want. Like, I put my suggested pairing, suggested accompaniment with the cheese, but that's not that's what I picked. So just I try not to, like, douse the cheese, you know, and some like peach jam when you don't like peaches, you know, and things like that.
Very smart.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, man. I feel like I'm going to go check flight prices to Denver.
Yes.
The minute I get home.
There's some good deals every once in a while. You're always welcome.
Oh, wow. Rachel, I can't believe it, but we've come to the end of the show.
Wow, that went by fast.
It did. Thank you so much for joining me
Thank
in the studio today.
Thank you for having me.
And good luck with the rest of your road trip.
Thank you. A long drive ahead.
A very long drive and a cheese-filled drive.
Yes.
I feel like I'm hoping, are you going to be posting about the journey on Instagram or
yes.
how can our listeners follow your path?
There? I think Instagram's going to be the best. And then when we get back, we're going to kind of make a compilation video, if you will,
good.
And post that. I just noticed Anthony coming up and taking pictures and videos while we're here.
Yeah, so. A little cameo from the studio here at Roberta's.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Awesome. Well, I can't wait. I can't wait to see all of that and hear about this and taste this new amazing cheese that you've done with Parrish Hill called...
I can't wait either. Acid washed.
Acid washed. Oh, yeah. It's so funny that you haven't tried
it
either.
I know. I almost asked him to send it to me overnight and I was like, I can wait a day.
Yeah, this is actually not necessary. Although I completely relate to that.
Yes.
Oh, dear. Well, listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Please keep the conversation going with us on Twitter and Instagram at @cuttingthecurd or shoot us an email at cuttingthecurd@heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back soon with more Cutting the Curd.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebrationing happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.